I'm John Wilkerson with Jimmy Hyams. And Jimmy, we head to the Stanley Fencing and Gates hotline for a special guest and a longtime friend of the program.
Absolutely. Brett McMurphy, he is with the stadium, does a fantastic job. Great reporter, longtime friend that I guess we first got associated at the SEC spring meetings down in Sandestin. Brett, how you doing?
Hey, good, Jimmy. My family actually went on vacation up there over Memorial Day. No SEC meetings, but I hit the little white ball around a little bit and thought of you. So next year, hopefully everything's back to normal.
I hope so, too. I actually went the week before to avoid the crowd. So we had the same thought in mind there. Yeah. I did want to ask you this. Are you surprised that the college football playoff is going to go from four teams to 12 instead of from four to eight?
You know, initially I was, because I think everybody thought it would just go to eight. Last year I had reached out to all 130 FBS athletic directors, and 72% wanted an 18 playoff and only 11% wanted to go bigger than eight. But I think the more you look at it, the more it makes sense. I think with an 18 playoff, then there's a lot of unanswered questions. Do conferences get automatic bids? If so, which conferences? Does the group of five get an automatic bid? Do you just take the top eight? I don't think it would please everybody, no matter what format they came up with. And I'm not to say what's the right format or not with eight teams. But going to 12, I think it basically takes care of everything. You're giving the automatic bids to the sixth highest ranked conference champions. So technically, the SEC is not guaranteed a bid. Now, obviously, the SEC champ, 1,000 out of 1,000 years, is going to be one of the top six conferences. But like last year, the Pac-12 would not have qualified, and you would have had Cincinnati from the American and Coastal from the Sun Belt in. So that takes care of the non-power leagues being guaranteed at least one spot. And then for any teams that are not conference champions, maybe suffered a late season loss, you know, if you're in that top 12 range, including Notre Dame, then you will be included in the playoffs. So I think it takes care of all that. And then also, you know, some people are saying, well, by expanding the playoff, you diminish the regular season. I don't agree with that. I think it adds even more interest into it, because now you've got a larger group of teams that actually have a shot to get to the playoff. I mean, previously in the 14 format, you know, you could count on one hand and maybe a couple other fingers, how many teams had a real shot to make that 14 field. But now with all the different conferences that will be alive, all the different teams, you're going to have, you know, four or five times as many teams getting in. And also you reward the best teams by getting that first round bye for seeds 1 through 4. So I am a little bit surprised, but I actually think it was the right move. They obviously didn't want to go all the way to 16. So I have no issues with it at all.
Are there any elements that surprise you, whether it's no automatic bids or Notre Dame cannot be a top four seed or seeds 5 through 8 get a home game, but the top four seeds do not?
Yeah, I guess as far as Notre Dame, I know I think a lot of people think Notre Dame got screwed in this deal. I think the complete opposite. I mean, look, if you're Notre Dame, you're not in a conference. You remain an independent. You control your schedule. You still keep all your television money, home television money, for yourself. So you're playing a 12-game season. Every other team that's going to a conference championship is playing 13. So basically what they're doing is they're trading out a conference championship game and being required to play in the first round of the playoffs. I think the way Notre Dame looks at it is, if we're one of the top eight teams in the country, we're going to host a first-round playoff game. That will be their quasi-conference title game. That will be the 13th game. And then if they win that game, then they'll take their chances in the with the remaining eight teams like everybody else. Also, you know, keep in mind with that additional home game, while the playoff money is still to be determined how that gets all split up, the economic – impact of having another home game in South Bend is obviously huge for that community. So I think that's a big bonus. I know a lot of people, you mentioned that the top four teams would not play at home. I guess one negative that a lot of people have brought out is that specific example. saying, well, the quarterfinals should also be on campus. That is not the proposal. The proposal is to have the bowl games, have the quarterfinal rounds. And I think it will probably end up that way. And I think it's a simple reason. If we would have had a 12-team format in the past 7 years of this playoff, and the quarterfinals could have been played on the home campuses, that would have meant the Rose Bowl and the Sugar Bowl, which would have the pick after the 12-team playoff, they would have got stuck with like four unranked teams, 10 teams with three or four losses. And, you know, it wasn't that long ago that the Rose Bowl had the champ from the Big Ten and the Pac-12. Then the 14 playoff started, and then some years they got the runner-up or whatever. So I don't think the granddaddy of them all is going to allow that to happen. Now, certainly one bowl cannot stop everything from happening, but I think that's why they want to include the bowl games in the quarterfinal rounds, Jimmy. And I think it's unlikely that they will change their mind, but, you know, who knows? They've got some meetings coming up in the this week and in the coming months. So maybe they have a change of opinion on that viewpoint as far as the quarterfinals.
Brett, do you have a feel at all for how this will work schedule-wise or logistically when you look at that first weekend in December, which is normally when the conference championship games are played? You then have a little bit of a window, but how quickly would they have to, for instance, take the SEC? You have Alabama, which beats Georgia. Georgia goes immediately into the 5 through 12 setup, and how soon would they turn around and host in Athens? And when do you figure these four games, potentially, as we would climb from the 12 through 5, 12 versus 5, then to the semifinals and so on, how do you think those would be thrown into the month of December and the month of January, and how deep would it extend the college football season rather than, say, the second week of January? Do you think we would get to the third or maybe even to a week before the Super Bowl?
Yeah, John, they have said that the plan, again, the plan, everything's proposed. It has to be officially approved by the university president. But the plan is to have the quarterfinal round on New Year's Day, mm-hmm. or December 31st or January 2nd, whatever, in that 48-hour window. So based on that, they would have the semifinals a week after that, which is usually when they have the championship game, and then they would have the championship game a week after that. So it would be basically the third Monday of January, where right now the championship game is on the second Monday in January. So then your real question, will they put the first round games? I believe there would be a week off after the conference championship games, because that would be, you know, if say the championship game's on the 6th, then that would put the first-round games. They would skip the 13th because that's finals week at a lot of schools, and they would play the first-round games on the 20th. You would skip the next week because of Christmas, and then you would go in the quarterfinals on the 1st. So I think it would only extend the season 1 week. Now, there's a very real possibility they could start the season earlier, mm-hmm. just to allow more bye weeks in the season for teams. But I don't think they're necessarily going to, say, shift the whole season up a week or 2 weeks so that the conference championship games would move from the first Saturday in December to the last Saturday in November. I don't think that would happen. That's too drastic. But they may start earlier just so teams can have an additional bye week in their 12-game schedule. And then I think they would conclude it, but only basically a week later. In January. People have asked me about the playing the week before the Super Bowl and all that. Again, what university presidents have said up to this point is they didn't want the championship game going into the second semester, into the spring semester. Mm-hmm. So it's actually going to be doing that by being played a week later than it is currently. So I, again, nothing's impossible, but I would think it would be unlikely if you would have, you know, first round matchup, take a week off, quarterfinals, next week semifinals, and then take another week off to wait, or 2 weeks to play before the Super Bowl. But again, they've got to finalize all this stuff. And hey, guys, as you know, money speaks louder than everything. So if they're going to make a lot more money moving it back to the end of January, I'm sure they'll find a reason to do that.
What do you think in terms of the ability for a fan base, let's just say you've got an outstanding five seed. They do get to play at home in that first round, but after that, that's three games that you have to hope you are in a position to travel to and attend. I just can't imagine this would be something that would be open to a large number of A-teams fans if they're indeed that good to play in each and every round. What do you think?
Well, you're absolutely right. And in fact, if you know, you even say teams that are, you know, that play that conference championship game, that make it to the final, if you're you know, whether you get a home game or not, or you get a first round bye, you're looking at your last four games being at neutral sites. Mm-hmm. If you do get that bye, Bob Bowlesby, the Big 12 commissioner, was asked about that on a conference call last week when they announced this. And I was surprised by his answer. One, I was surprised the commissioner would actually say this publicly, but he's 1,000% right. He said, look, you have other options. There's a TV set in front of you. Certainly, I'm surprised somebody of his magnitude would actually suggest people not to go to games to watch it on TV, but I think that's a real possibility. But again, I don't. It is different, but it is kind of similar to what's going on now with, say, in Alabama. Obviously, it only impacts one school, but if you're an Alabama fan, how many Alabama fans, you know, have not gone to the semifinal game because they're saving up to go to the final because they know they're going to be in the final? I'm sure there's a large majority. I'm sure there's a lot of people that go to both. So it's going to make it tougher for fans to go to all the games. They did mention that, you know, they do assist the families, the players' families to go to these playoff games. They expect to continue that, whether it's a first-round game, a quarterfinal game, et cetera. But yeah, you're absolutely right. For Joe fan that wants to go see them play every game, it's going to be financially challenging for them to do so.
I guess Brett McMurphy with the stadium. Brett, in terms of going from 4 to 12, do you think that is more about making sure the Pac-12 is represented and more access to the group of five? Or do you think it's just about money, more games, more money?
Jimmy, it's more games, more money. I mean, they're not going to expand if they're going to make less money. It's like a conference expanding. A conference is not going to add any additional teams unless that team is going to bring more money, more value to that conference. You're not going to add a school and say, hey, you know what, guys, we're going to make less money. So you're going to hear all the reasons why they're expanding. They're not going to mention money, but you're dead on. Money's the number one reason. But also to basically, it solves the group of five problem. You know, with six conferences getting a bid, there's only five power leagues. So they are guaranteed in the playoff, no matter how bad they are, no matter how lowly rated that sixth conference champion is, that team is getting into the playoff. So then they'll have their chance. So now they have their chance to shut up or put up. And you know what, in a weird way, which actually, I think this will impact teams like Tennessee, because I think now it's going to be easier if you're at a group of five program. If, you know, Josh Heupel came from UCF. I think UCF has an easier path to the playoff than Tennessee, because UCF doesn't have to be better than Alabama. They don't have to be better than Georgia. They don't have to be better than Florida. They don't have to be better than LSU. All they have to do is they have to be better than Boise State and Memphis and Houston and Coastal Carolina or whatever, and win their conference, and they're in. Where teams like Tennessee that are not among the top two or three elite of the Power Five conferences, so take out the Alabamas, Ohio States, Oklahomas, and you've got that, you know, there's 20 or 30 teams that, you know, are in the 4 to 8 range in their conference every year. I think it's going to be tough on those fan bases, because those fan bases are going to sit there and say, look, we just expanded the playoff to 12 teams, and we can never make the playoff. But Coastal Carolina's been in it twice. Boise State's been in it. You know, UCF's been in it, and we can't get into it. So I think that's something to look at, Jimmy, several years down the road, is how did it impact these middle-of-the-mid-tier Power 5 schools because they didn't make the playoffs. Does that mean there's going to be more coaching turnover? Does that mean there's going to be more disgruntled fans? That's a real thing to look at. Like, if you're Vanderbilt, you're like, okay, we weren't going to make a 14 playoff. We're not going to make a 12-team playoff. But it's the, you know what I mean? It's the tier under the Bamas and the Georgias, where that's certainly a realistic goal, and now you're not making it, but the playoffs have expanded. How will the fan bases react to that? That's something I think will be fascinating and to keep an eye on.
That's a great point. Are you convinced this will be implemented within the next 2 years? This 12-year contract is not going to run its course with four teams, correct?
Yeah, I mean, I've talked to sources that say, and to keep in mind, the current format is, like you said, it's 12 years, but it's basically 4 3-year deals. So last year was the first year of the latest 3-year deal, and that basically allows the New Year's Six games to alternate hosting the semifinals. So this year, 2021 is year two, 2022 is year three, and then they start over for the final 3-year cycle in the contract. But no, everyone that I've talked to, the majority says, yes, this thing will start in 2023. There are still some people whose opinion I value a great deal, and they said, no, they will finish out this contract and they will start it in 2026. The reason why, not that I don't think those people are giving me bad information, but the reason why I don't buy that is Jack Swarbrick, the Notre Dame AD, said they've been discussing this for the past 2 years. They just had a press conference last week. They're having meetings this week. They're having meetings in the next coming months. So all indications are, if they can get all the financial details hammered out, which isn't easy, that they'll announce they're going to a 12-team playoff. So what league, professional, amateur, I don't know, your softball league, your kids' wiffle ball league, what league has ever said, we're going to go from a 14 playoff to an expanded playoff? But you know what, guys? We're going to wait 5 years to do it. Nobody in their right mind would do that, because you know what you'd have me on talking about is, well, Brett, we got four more years to wait for this playoff. How would a 12-team playoff look? No one would talk about the 4-team playoff. So yeah, I think everyone's going to say, well, there's caution. You know, we're going to finish the deal. But when it comes down to it, I think it would – look, had a lot of PR disasters with the BCS. This would top them all if they announce in September, we're having a 12-team playoff, but we're not starting it till 2026. Oh, man, it'll be a field day for you guys, because you'll have endless content.
That's right.
If we happen to see in this next round of the college football playoff what we have seen so many times, and that's wipeouts in the semifinals that set up the championship game – is there anybody that would revisit the 12-team playoff, or is this going to be, this is the only direction in which they're headed? Do you think there's any adjustment in that regard, that if we just continue to see the group of four or five or six true contenders, if there continues to be a gap between them and everybody else, anything that would change, or are you convinced it will be straight from 4 to 12 when we do expand?
No, I don't think so. Quite frankly, they should have this hammered out before this year's playoffs. You would think it would be official by then. But even if it's not, I don't think they're going to sit there and say, well, look, we're going to look at a 2 or 3 year window, and we can't expand because they're not going to be competitive. But you're absolutely right. We can go to 12 teams. We can have all these new variety of teams in there. We can throw in a couple of group of fives. We can play on campus and all that. We can do all these things, but you know what? We still may end up with Alabama, Clemson in the final, but at least we would have had a little variety along the way. But yeah, even if it's not officially locked down before this year's playoffs, even if there's two more semifinal blowouts, I don't think that's going to change their mind, because ultimately, you know, like Jimmy mentioned earlier, it's all going to come down to the more money, and you know, money makes the world go round, and certainly coming off the pandemic, you know, that's certainly important for universities. And you know, the good news is we have 12 teams. The bad news is we got to wait 2 more years to get there, but I'm pretty confident we should have it after the 2023 regular season.
One bit of news we saw away from college football playoff is that Nick Saban has three more years on his contract, I guess through 2029. Do you think that there's work going on in some lab in Tuscaloosa, some biological type hard drive that at some point they'll just be able to download his brainwave so they can just continue to extend him deeper and deeper into the future?
Isn't that how he's coaching right now? I mean, no, I'm kidding. Dude, I know we got Tennessee fans listening, and this may not be a shock to anybody, but that guy is not going to retire. I know I've been told too many stories about how, and obviously it's no surprise how committed he is. You know, look, he's not itching to retire so he can go play golf every day. This is what he does. This is what he loves to do. So bad news, college football. You got to deal with Nick Saban for a long, long time. As long, you know, hopefully his health stays good. But yeah, you know, sorry for all other SEC schools out there, but I do. Yeah, I don't see Saban going anywhere anytime soon. And you mentioned his contract. You know, $8 million, whatever it is. I would argue that he's underpaid. I think he should make three times that much. And the reason is the amount of money he's brought to that university is, you know, 10 or 15 times more. When, you know, younger people, if go Google up Alabama's football history and go back and find the names Mike Shula and, you know, and see where Alabama was then and see where they are now. He's worth every penny. But, yeah, brainwaves in a wheelchair, whatever it is, he's going to be out there, I think, until he physically cannot coach anymore.
Hey, Brett, thanks for that good news. We appreciate that.
Yeah. Go Rocky Top. Yeah, sorry, man.
Hey, we do really appreciate you joining us. You do a terrific job and great insight on things. So thank you so much for joining us and hope you enjoy the rest of your summer.
You got it, Jimmy. Hope to see you soon, and let's go hit the white ball sometime.
I'd love to. Yep. Appreciate that.
Take care, buddy.
Brett McMurphy does a terrific job. He's with the stadium.
Joining us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. To join us, 656-9900, 656-9900.
And, John, I think to underscore what Brett McMurphy's talking about, absolutely it's a lot about money. I do think COVID has impacted this. The points he makes about how after 2 years they're going to go to this playoff and I'm going to set up these rules and then – wait many, many years to go with it. So it is. I will be curious. And I also wonder if this proposal, John, is going to get tweaked before it's actually adopted. I guess there's a chance it could be. I don't know that it will be, but I would be curious to see how that's going to work. And then what bowl games are going to be inclusive in this? We've already seen a number of bowl games that have been a part of the current 4-team college football playoff and the rotation that they use with the Peach Bowl, the Orange Bowl, the Cotton Bowl, the Rose Bowl, the Sugar Bowl, etc. I wonder if those same bowls and maybe a couple of others will be a part of this playoff system.
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. And I also wonder if there isn't some way that the Rose Bowl can position itself to where it either gets the highest rated champion between the Big Ten and the Pac-12 for its first game, if indeed the quarterfinals are that 30 New Year's Eve or New Year's Day, and exactly how they might best preserve what they prefer their bowl experience to be for the fan bases that they're used to playing host to, and how that plays out. But I do think that they can perhaps solidify a couple of bowl locations when you look at the increased number of sites they'll need to play it out from, I guess, 8 teams on in. So this could be a lifeline for a bowl location or two just to work in the rotation and perhaps climb the ladder occasionally. But I'll be surprised if what you said doesn't happen, that there won't be some tweaks, because I still think logistically there are a lot of things that right now they've kind of just written to the side in the ledger. I mean, excuse me, on the side of the page to where – they perhaps haven't given it a complete full thought as to how best to implement it. So they might be over there in the margins and then think, okay, we do have to address this at some point.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see how they play this. And that point that you're making about you could end up playing your last four games at neutral sites is pretty interesting too. We're not used to seeing college football teams playing that many games in a row on neutral sites.
Let's check in with Steve. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Steve.
Hey, fellas.
Hey.
Hey, I called Nisty and was told about the little guy from Louisiana. Tell me more about him besides his great speed.
In 2019, he had a big year. He rushed for, I think, over 1,100 yards. He scored a number of touchdowns. I don't remember exactly how many. And in 2020, I'm not sure what they did. Some schools shut it down and didn't play. Even in the state of Tennessee, we had some high schools that played and some didn't, and I got no stats from him. So I don't know if the school didn't play or he didn't play for whatever reason. I don't know, but I got nothing on 2020 numbers wise. But 2019, he had a big year, and that would have been his sophomore year.
Right.
So, but he's got pretty good size. And even though he's got tremendous speed, he is set to run with some power. And so I think this is a guy, based on the spread and what Tennessee's going to do offensively, I think he's a really good fit for this offense. He's what you look, in my opinion, what you look for in this offense is more of an Eric Gray and not a Jalen Hurd. And this guy, to me, is more like an Eric Gray.
Okay. Well, okay. Now, Tennessee's got what? 6 public commitments. Am I right about that?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I can't remember the name. I want to ask you about somebody that's on the team right now. The wide receiver from Georgia. I think he will be in his third year, I suppose, next season. And early on last year, he seemed to play quite a bit. And I can't remember him having a catch.
Is that Ramel Keaton?
They attempted to field passes down the field to him a few times. He didn't, the ball wasn't there. He wasn't where he's supposed to be or whatever. But if I can remember his name, I know you can tell me all about his prospects.
Are you talking about Ramel Keaton?
Yes.
Okay. All right. By the way, you know Malachi Wideman has left the program. You know that, correct?
I didn't know, but I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
If he hadn't have left, I would have been surprised. The guy we was talking about, Jimmy, talk about him. What do you think they think about him as a prospect?
Well, I don't. You know, we were limited in what we were able to see in the spring, and so that was kind of hard to tell. I don't know that he really stepped up and did a lot in the spring. I heard more about some other receivers than I did him.
Right.
He's a guy, and you kind of mentioned this. He's a guy that would make some plays now and then just disappear. I don't know. I don't know how he figures into the plans. I'll say this, and I mentioned this before. Tennessee needs to have at least 5 or 6 receivers they can depend on. When you spread the field and you run that many plays, you got to have some depth there. And he's a guy that I think it's very important that he can provide some of that depth. But I think he's got to step it up. I just haven't seen enough out of him that makes me think you can depend on him right now. So I think this August camp is going to be very huge for him.
Right. Well, let me ask you this. I know y'all would remember. When Bush Jones was there, and no kidding how many receivers over the period of a few years missed games with injuries. And I thought to myself, receiver ought not to be that physical a condition, a thing that many people get hurt. And I would bet you that 70% of our wide receivers, you know, over a period of time, missed action because of injuries. I know y'all remember that. There's a bunch of them. So we'll see. But anyway, listen, you guys hang in there. Good to learn something from you, and hopefully the season will be much better. But you know,
well, the bar's not been set very high in that regard, so it won't take much to exceed what they did in 2020.
Right. Well, okay. Well, okay, guys. I will probably try to call Thursday and talk to Brent. And I got some stuff I could ask if I call back tomorrow.
All right.
If I
You're always welcome. Steve, we sure do appreciate it.
And, John, one of the NBA playoffs, the big storyline, the Nets against Milwaukee, the Nets without Harden and Kyrie Irving. Well, Harden's doubtful. We'll see if he plays. Do you think if one of those two comes back, the Nets win?
I certainly like their chances better with that. I don't know that Durant can do it by himself. I do think that the Nets have gotten, you know, you look at some of those veterans they added throughout the course of the season, and I do think that, I mean, perhaps we've seen a little bit more than we thought we might from Blake Griffin. But I just really think that you have to have one or the other. And it has been not humorous because somebody's coming back from injury, but it's been, okay, he goes from doubtful to, let's see, yeah, he goes from out to doubtful, now doubtful to questionable. So maybe he's just going to be right as rain by the time we actually get to tip off at 8:30. So I just I do think that they need somebody to just shoulder the load with Durant. I think it's interesting that Milwaukee's actually a 2.5-point favorite on the road in tonight's game.
Ooh, yeah. Well, and the thing about hamstrings, and I'm learning this all too well, those things are they got a mind of their own. Well, I think we saw Harden play, wasn't it like 47 seconds or something like that? I mean, right early in the game, he tweaked his hamstring and he's been out. Mm-hmm. If he plays, I don't think he's going to be that effective. I think he's going to be nursing it. I think he's going to be mindful of not tweaking it again. And so I don't think he's going to play at that level. I actually believe at this point that Milwaukee's going to win this series, even though I felt like the Nets, if healthy with all three, that was my pick to win the NBA title. But I just don't see Harden being effective, Kyrie Irving not playing. I think Milwaukee's going to take them.
I think so as well. And I do think that perhaps Harden might be in a little bit better position than when we saw Durant trying to come back from the Achilles in the finals a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
That was just sad how he got back out there, had worked so hard to get back out there and was gone after essentially a quarter. So I do think that they are apples and oranges in terms of the injury you're dealing with. But I also think, like you say, that if he is indeed Harden able to get back on the floor, he's not going to be full go, and he is going to have to be mindful. Is that something that's just maybe a misstep, or is that something that's actual pain in regards to the injury? I just think that that would be a huge distraction and one that I don't know he would be able to work past with the Nets. Now, I also thought, I guess it was the first game without Harden, that they just wiped out Milwaukee by like 25 points.
Yeah.
The Bucks, I think, have certainly been able to become a little bit more confident. Winning the last two games has been huge for them. And I think they are going to see if they can't get this quote-unquote break as it's Brooklyn serve.
I think the Nets have taken load management to another level.
Yeah.
Probably not the level Steve Nash wanted. But you know, in all seriousness, it is a shame that you got a team that, in my opinion, has the capability of winning the NBA title to be beset by injuries. But it's happened all year. They've played more games without those three than they have with them, far more games. Now, I did see this stat. The Nets are 4-1 when Kevin Durant plays without the other two. Now, what I don't know, who are those five teams they played?
Yes.
You know, so if they were playing bad opponents, okay. If they were playing teams that won over 40 games, teams that are in the playoffs, that's another story. I don't know the answer to that, but I just don't know that I feel like Durant can do it on his own. You're right about Blake Griffith. He had a double-double in a playoff game recently, 18 points and 14 rebounds. I think Joe Harris is a terrific three-point shooter, and so they're going to call on him to come through and play a little bit more. But I think the Nets are in trouble if both Harden and Kyrie Irving don't play.
Yes. And they'll tip off tonight at 8:30. It is the only game on the NBA schedule tonight. But why don't we get a break and be back with hour number 4 of Sports Talk. We'll have a lot coming your way between now and when we step aside at 7 o'clock. But next, it's your chance to win. It's the Sports Fix at 6 as you listen to 99.1, The Sports Animal.